Welcome back to the Ink Sink. I am Annie. If you're looking for Kaylee, she will be on in just a second. Don't touch that dial. This is a bit of a different kind of episode. I wanted to let you know before we jumped in, we recorded this as part of our news episode from last week, but we felt like this was more than just news. What we're going to talk about today, it's kind of an existential problem in the book business. So this episode is about book bans going after diverse voices and also about some business changes in the book business that might also affect diversity in books. These conversations are a little bit long, but the first segment starts off with some good news. So enjoy. Moving on, Illinois has a governor named J.D. Pritzker, which we think is the best name ever. It sounds like he should have a starched collar. Kaylee, does he have a starched collar?
No, he does not, sadly, but everything else about this man is the best kind of note hitting, I guess.
Tell us what's going on in Overopen, Illinois.
So he has been a staunch supporter against book bans since day one when it became a question in his realm. He's been like, no. We're not indulging that. In fact, I am an anti-book banning. You know, you can't do that.
He put on his collar. He got on his little soap, his little actual box made of soap. I don't know. What are soap boxes?
They're the boxes soap used to come in, and they would...
Were they just particularly large
boxes? No, they
boxes?
Were just... People needed soap. There was a lot of soap.
Okay.
I guess. I don't...
Okay, so I know he got up on his conveniently sized soap box.
Correct.
Box full of... Not full of soap. It's an empty box, but it used to have soap in it. And he said, no book bans in Illinois. And we appreciate him.
And so, and then it has coalesced at this point into a lull.
Yeah.
So he has been fighting it. And this has just been something, if you've listened to us, that we have been chatting about for 2 years also. But he has, in fact, signed this into legislation at this point, where if you accept state funds, then not only do you have to state that you are against book bans, but you have to act on that in such a way that you can prove that you're against book bans, essentially. So there's a grace period, of course, before it becomes into effect to give people time. Most libraries probably have something already to this effect in place, but maybe they need to tweak it slightly. There's a grace period, I think it's January when it takes into effect, where if you have not chosen to act, you will lose your state funding. So I think it is... It's heartening that there is a state that is attempting to protect, libraries and defend against the ongoing pressure of politicized fear-mongering.
Agreed. And if you are only vaguely aware of what book bans are now.
You haven't been listening to the Ink Sink, clearly.
That's right. You've been spelling our name wrong. You haven't been finding it in your search bar. So let's let you know. Basically, there are... This is not us being biased. This is a literal thing. These people are self-described conservative activists, and we can point to them because there are only 20 or 30 of them in the entire country, and the super banners, I'm putting that in quotes, there are only 11 of those, and they are self-described conservative activists. Conservative activists are going to libraries and, in some cases, bookstores and saying, the books that you are carrying depict things that I do not believe should be depicted and available for public consumption. Therefore, I am going to challenge these books. Many of these are in school libraries, and the lists of these books are concerning for anyone who believes that diversity is a good thing and who believes that people should be allowed to love who they want to love. As long as it's consensual, and also books about what is consent and how does that work. They've been banning books about the history of race in America, which feels very much like hiding under a rock and hoping bad things go away. They've been banning books about gay people just existing, which again is hiding under a rock and hoping things go away. They've been attempting to ban books about teenagers having sex, which I think is just extremely optimistic.
I just want to, you can pull numbers from local, again, if you have this in your state and you haven't outlawed it, Planned Parenthood and support programs. I graduated from a school that was the smallest school and yet had the highest population of, like, ratio-wise, I should say, not the highest population, because there were larger schools that had more pregnant graduates, but ratio-wise had the most pregnant graduates. I was in the Bible Belt.
And you didn't have sex education?
I didn't there, no. Yeah. I don't know what their sex education is like there. I was in a senior when I graduated. I have no clue. It wasn't clearly good enough. Or setting that aside, maybe it was, and, like, these parents pulled their kids out, because you do have that as an option.
Right, right.
I don't get it. That's so funny
that in the Bible Belt you can do that. And here in public schools up in the, we're in the Mid-Atlantic, you don't have the option. You have the option for a couple years, and then they just put it right into the health thing, and they're like, we're teaching this to the kids. You want them to call out sick, feel free, but it's getting taught.
And there's going to be a test.
Yeah, right, exactly.
It's just baffling to me that you think that, like, the fact, like, not only is it that, you know, these books target sex, it targets periods, menstruation.
Right, yeah.
And they put it hand in hand with administration not being able to talk to kids about
periods and menstruation.
Periods and menstruation. When I was 12, I got my first period. If I hadn't had a decent sex education class, I would have been fucked.
Because you have no idea what's happening.
My mom didn't.
This is literally the plot of Carrie.
And my mom didn't talk to me about it.
Right.
Like, I just,
those of you who haven't read Carrie, the plot starts with a girl who has her period, and she's been, like, really sheltered, so she has no idea what's going on, and then she's, like, traumatized by it, and then Carrie happens. Like,
you know, you have to know that part, at least, probably. Like, yeah, it's a cultural touchstone, like, at come this on. Point. But, like, yeah, it's awful. It's just bad. It's just bad. It's bad faith arguments made in clear, like, admitted bad faith.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, they're very clear that they just don't want these ideas in kids' heads. And I do want to, like, sorry to get, like, all biological on us for a hot second, but because of various factors, menstruation is starting for young girls in America earlier and earlier, I think at as young as 8 now. And if they don't know what is happening,
I'm so mad about this.
You've set your child up for a genuinely traumatizing experience. I don't want to reference, like, a fictional horror. God damn, I can't say that word. A fictional scary book as, like, a real world thing, but I think that it's tapping into something that is very true, where if you don't know what's happening, it is scary to just have blood coming out of you. And if you don't know what's going on, then you don't know what's going on. You just need, basically, the book banners are trying to legislate, and they are actively lobbying both libraries and legislatures. They're trying to legislate kids out of an education about things that they just don't like thinking about, which is
trash. It's just trash. I'm sorry. It's bad. They're bad. Yeah. They should feel bad. They're wrong.
Pritzker in Illinois made sure to pass laws in Illinois that make that much more difficult for anyone to do. Libraries have to prove that they are working against book banning. That story comes to us from CNN, and NewsGazette.com went to talk to some of the actual libraries, the librarians. They have some concerns. Most of those are about the logistics of this taking of state funding. They're like, oh, what if we get it done too late? And what if these are a little bit too vague? And I think that that's reasonable as well, and that does need to be worked out. So I hope that the Pritzker administration does make sure to
give them clear guidelines.
Agreed. Yeah. So I'm not saying Pritzker's a perfect person. I've never seen a picture of them other than knowing that they don't wear a starched collar. So in my head, they still have those, like, big mutton chops.
And, oh, yeah. No, I don't think he has those either.
And maybe, like, a waistcoat and, like, a little pocket
I've seen him in a blazer.
Okay.
I've seen him in a blazer. All right. So he could kind of pull off, like, maybe a little bow tie.
Oh.
I could see him in a bow tie.
Maybe those, like, little round glasses that Benjamin Franklin wore.
God. Look, we're not turning you into a character, sir, but we do respect that you are trying. And so please, please don't come out in the news as being a terrible person.
Yeah.
But speaking of separating art from the artist in general, like, we still support this particular view, whatever happens.
Absolutely. Moving on, some kind of sad news. For those of you who have been paying attention to entertainment news, you know that the Writers Guild and the Screen Actors Guild for Hollywood, specifically movie and TVs, are on strike at the moment. But news magazines and other entertainment websites are not doing much better. And they are, in fact, responding to some pullbacks in the market poorly by firing many, many, many people.
And in some cases, I'm jumping ahead from the media jobs. So let's stick with media jobs. That's your first
okay. So this comes to us from Axios. The level of job cuts this past year has been worse than at the outset of the pandemic. In the pandemic, 16,000 jobs were cut. But recently, broadcast, digital, and print news outlets have collectively announced 1,900 job cuts so far this year, surpassing the 1,800 cuts announced in all of 2022. That's the zoom out there. Basically, media is just not doing super well. And some of that might be because of the pandemic. Some of it might be because of just some other changes in the industry. We've talked a little bit about this. I can link in our AI episode about how just we're in a new era, I think, in digital media. And we cover digital media a lot in this podcast. And so that kind of matters to us. But that era is just beginning right now. We don't know what it's going to shape into. I think AI will be a part of it, of course, but I think that with the fall of what fell? Vox? Vice? One of those started with a V. So sorry. Vox or Vice?
Vice. So, I think
sorry, everybody. Yeah. And then, you know, BuzzFeed also closing its newsroom. I think that there's a lot going on right now that I don't think can be totally laid at the feet of AI, but media jobs are being cut left and right, and book jobs are not doing that much better. This one comes from Fortune. Penguin Random House is offering buyouts to a lot of its editors and publishers.
Or just firing them.
Or just outright firing them. Yeah,
that was, it was awful. So, and it's obviously hitting different companies differently, but
This is a quote from the Fortune article. Longtime editors of such prominent writers as Anne Rice, Laurie Moore, and Nobel laureates Alice Munro and Elie Wiesel are among those stepping down by the end of the year. They've accepted their buyouts. Basically, Penguin Random House is saying, we need to downsize. Like, there's just not enough money to go around, essentially. They're not going to be able to sustain the amount that they've been editing up to now.
Yeah, sad.
So, possibly related, the book business has problems.
No, Annie, what? Why do we have this podcast again?
It's true. One of the things that I think that someone pointed out, and they were wrong, but it reminded me that this is a well-held belief that, like, anyone who publishes a book makes it onto the New York Times bestseller list. Because it feels like if you walk into a bookstore, every single one has a sticker that says New York Times bestseller or bestselling author or something along those lines. And the reason that that is the case is that a lot of, especially your Barnes & Noble's chains bookstores, will only carry books like that. And you might notice there are a lot of books in there. So it feels like anytime someone publishes a book, it will become a bestseller. That is not the case. There are a lot of books that gets published every single year. There are millions of books getting published every year. Only maybe 100 are making it onto any kind of bestseller list. And only maybe only those 100 or so are going to be selling more than maybe 5,000 copies.
We've talked about that before. Like, that's like a good,
yeah,
like, number for something.
The book business is made on excess. Basically, they just publish a lot of books every single year, and they are essentially throwing spaghetti at the wall. Instead of, you know, supporting the authors and marketing each book as it should be marketed, with the level it should be marketed, and instead of creating a marketing plan that goes along with those books, we've talked about this, especially with ARCs, like them spending the money to send out ARCs, instead of just compensating the author for the book a little bit more, or planning the ARCs a little bit better, instead of sending them to people who just aren't going to read them or who aren't going to like them, they can do better. And unfortunately, it feels to me like this era of digital media is hitting the book business as well in this way, where they're being forced to not just throw money at the wall and then hope to make returns, but instead that they need to more thoughtfully plan their book calendars. They call them book catalogs. They call it the catalog for the year. Mm-hmm.
So just in case it wasn't, like, super obvious, what Annie is describing is something that we had talked about earlier in this episode. It's just the excess of the physical copies of the books that are being created.
And the digital one. Honestly, just the excess of books published as well. But yeah, like there's just a ton of physical books being created that aren't.
To be fair to that point, obviously it does take up a lot. The footprint is not a net negative for digital content either. I mean, it has to be created and maintained. So obviously there is that as well. But the specific, the moral outrage is easier to trigger with pictures of books being dumped in landfills, basically, right. Which is what we're seeing a lot of. And then also, then that's something we had described earlier, just to different predatory practices encourage this as a response where you have to, you know, republish your same thing every year or you lose your job.
Yeah.
Which is just terrible. And it's very frustrating across the board. And there does need to be a response. And 100%, you know, there's only certain things that the publishing industry can do when they're responding to an outside need. But there are things that they can do when they are not responding to, like, a demand for another, say, 200 or 300 copies for a school. Which is exactly what Annie was talking about, like forecasting better, just being more intelligent about their approach. I don't know why this is so revolutionary. It would save them money.
Yeah. One of the things that like big Hollywood studios do is they only invest in 2 or 3 movies a year, and then they'll make their money back because they are investing in those movies. And if even if they don't make their money back, they're at least going to be making at least some money back on the other ones, you know. Meanwhile, publishers are publishing hundreds of books a year each, and that's a problem. So
the weirdest things that they're picking up from Hollywood, like, not the stuff that's profitable. Like, what on earth? I'm sorry.
It's insane. And that's, I think, one of the reasons that we talked about this on a recent episode. Book packaging companies do so well is because their costs are so low. They are only putting out books that they know are going to get sold because they're in series that are doing really well. They're part of these massive IPs that already exist and will keep getting sold because people love them. And I think that that's something that we're going to see a lot of, probably more in the future, specifically because, Kaylee, who bought Simon & Schuster?
Oh my gosh, private equity. The villain in every recent article. KKR, I don't remember the actual name
KKR,
of
it.
Yeah. I don't remember the way that breaks down into the acronym, what it means, but... So KKR is a private equity firm that purchased Simon & Schuster. So we recently talked about how the merging between, was it Penguin Random House and Simon & Schuster was blocked to prevent a monopoly, which we were all very happy about. But now we're all kind of like, there was another villain lurking in the wings. So we've also talked about how private equity has not historically been great. And part of the issue, not all of it, like news has been going because it has to migrate and shift and in historically has not been like housed by trendsetters in digital content and like technology. It's slow to respond and to change. Mm-hmm. It was not helped by private equity coming in and doing what it does to basically gas the profits and then try to turn the flip. Businesses.
It's yeah. News. We'll link to
our former
local business or our local news apocalypse episode where we talk a lot more about that, how a lot of private equity companies are buying up small local news firms and just gutting them.
And it's really disheartening here because Simon & Schuster is not doing poorly. So it's not even like they're trying to cut bad habits.
Yeah, so what are you going to juice, basically? A lot of people are very worried that they're going to just start cutting people because...
And for no reason, because they're doing well.
They're doing well, yeah. Private equity, the normal playbook for a private equity firm is to jump in when a business is doing poorly and then make some business changes, cut costs, juice profits, and then sell the company again, either onto the market, making it a public company, giving it, like, you know, putting it on the stock market, or to another buyer, another... you know, private company. But basically now, for those of you keeping track, Simon & Schuster and Penguin Random House both are owned by private equity companies. And I know that this is very, very cynical, but maybe the private equity companies will stop them throwing money at the wall. My hope is that it'll do that and then leave and then not, like, make any other horrible changes.
Let's cross our fingers. I'm hoping.
I feel like it's such a cynical view. Like, it's not... you know.
And consider like that. I think that that's intelligent. I do think that that will hit the authors.
To your point, I think that if you were saying, if you went to like the author community and were like, hey guys, we're gonna make sure that only the best authors get published and we're gonna focus on them and invest in them, I don't think any author would get upset because I think every author believes that they are the best author. But functionally, it would be fewer opportunities for fewer people. And that's ultimately, you know, we talk about, you know, like this excess is a bad thing, but also this excess is one of the only ways that we've been able to have any diversity at all.
Especially up until recently when there have been like actual initiatives in companies to bring diversity forward.
I mean, it's only been recently that romance with Black leads has been just categorized as general romance and not urban romance or color romance or something like that. Like, I don't know if you ever saw that going through the aisles at your Barnes and Noble, but I always saw
urban romance. Oh, that's gross. I stayed away from romance series. So like, gross. I mean, I like read, like, I would go, I would usually get mine from, like, there were action romance or fantasy romance. So, like, it.
Sci-fi romance or something.
Yeah, like it was same. Already in like the main section and it just happened to also have romance. That's the romance section has historically
been extremely racist. It's really bad, but them, you know, throwing spaghetti at the wall, publishing whoever is available to be published has been a good thing because it's allowed some of these smaller authors to build their audience. And I think that it is very important for that to have happened. I don't think it's a bad thing that it happened. And I think moving it to maybe another platform, maybe more self-publishing.
I was going to say self-publishing, I think that's a good thing. It's going to be.
But also, like, right now, self-publishing has been overtaken by AI. So, like, it's like, you can't, it's like, diverse voices can't win, it feels like sometimes. But also, I think that there is, it will allow some diverse voices to have the chance that they should have had to begin with. And I don't think that we can get extremely mad at that. I don't think throwing spaghetti at the wall is almost ever the right business choice. So
it's also not the way to figure out if spaghetti is done.
Yeah. Just in case
anybody's curious.
That's the origin of that saying. So people would throw spaghetti at the wall to see if it was done. And it never is. But basically, like, it's almost a, I wish we already lived in the perfect world where diverse voices were getting published at the rate mm-hmm. that they should have been always.
Yeah.
We're not living in that world. The options to make that happen are not good. There are no, like, perfect options right now. And I have a lot of complicated feelings about the current situation.
Yep. Agreed. So we'll be...
I want to know what you all think.
We'll be watching. But yes, also, please, if you guys have any thoughts... If you all have any thoughts, we would love...
Let us know.
Engage and have a discussion.
Yeah.
Like,
what is the solution here? I mean, there must be one.
Or what do you think? Yeah. Like, what do you think about the problem?
Yeah.
Even? Like, you don't even have to come. If you have a solution, like, just let me know. We want to know. But also, like, you don't have to. I feel no pressure to have a solution.
No. But if you just have some thoughts. I don't want to hear from you unless you have a spreadsheet lined up with all the answers.
I need facts ready to go. No, I'm kidding. But if you have any just thoughts about, like, maybe impacts of the problem that we haven't considered, or even just your thoughts about the things that we've already discussed, we'd love to hear.
Yeah. There are rumors going around the industry. And this isn't an article that I sent to you, so I'm just telling you a rumor that I heard that is probably not true.
Tell me all the gossip.
So because Penguin Random House is owned by private equity, and the CEO of Penguin Random House has been doing a little bit of a press tour lately, like that he's been profiled in like 9 different magazines lately. A couple people are thinking that this is a portent of that private equity company that owns Penguin Random House might be trying to sell it soon. And I don't know who they'd be selling it to. Maybe they'd be taking it back public. Maybe they would be giving it to some other media conglomerate. We don't know. But
I mean, it makes sense why they're doing all the buyouts. They're trying to juice profits.
Good point. Maybe it's all related. Yeah.
Getting rid of their bigger names. Mm-hmm. And then just firing a bunch of their, like, and I couldn't find it in the article. So, like, cut me if I'm mistaken. But at least one of the major publishing companies that had lost people recently, or if it may have been in the media article and I just couldn't find it because I couldn't read the whole article again on my phone. I'm just not logged into things here. But was like their entire editorial staff, like, what baffling choices.
Staff your editorial departments is Kaylee's coda from I think the book packaging episode. Mm-hmm. And I think that we can just make that standing.
Why? Are you?
What's the point?
Why would you get rid of your editorial? The people that make sure that you're not publishing trash.
Yeah. No, they want to publish trash.
I guess so.
Hey there, Annie from the future again. Since we recorded this episode, the Hollywood writers' strike has wound down. It looks like they're pretty close to a deal. There have also been some other updates on the book banning front, but we will actually be getting to those in next episode, so stay tuned for next week. We put out a call for feedback in this episode. You can email us at theinksyncpodcast@gmail.com. Our DMs are also open on Facebook and Instagram. You can even join us on Discord by supporting us on Ko-fi. I don't think that I talked about that as a benefit of joining us on Ko-fi, but guess what? If you join us on Ko-fi and support us for as low as a dollar, you can join us on our Discord. Speak directly to Kaylee and I, which is, you know, a privilege, if I'm honest. Sorry. If you are looking for ways to support diverse voices, which we hope you are if you're listening to this podcast, we recommend that you buy books by diverse authors. And we actually have a list of books by trans authors up on our bookshop page. We also have a list of books by Latina authors. I've moved them to the top of our book list, so you can find them. You can find that by clicking on the bookshop button on our Linktree. Actually, you can find links to all of these things in our Linktree, our Facebook, Instagram, our email, I guess isn't there, but you know, you guys know how to use email, right? Anyway, you can find our Linktree wherever you found this show. Thank you for listening.